It hits you whenever you visit Chicago or Toronto or New York, Washington. How you're able to get around the city without a car, without having to fork over big bucks for downtown parking, all for the price of a subway or a bus ticket. And then you come home to Michigan's major cities, where a subway system's but a dream, and buses may or may not roll up and be able to get you to where you want to go. The Southeast Michigan region didn't even have an authority, a regional authority, until very recently when the lame duck legislature passed Senate Bill 909 and created a Southeast Michigan Regional Transit Authority. This includes Wayne, Oakland, Macomb, and Washtenaw counties, and the new transportation authority will be overseen by a 10-member appointed board. But still, why is Michigan so far behind when it comes to mass transit? Adi Tamer is a senior research associate at the Brookings Institution, a Washington-based think tank, and he joins us now. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So just why are Michigan's major cities lagging so far behind other states when it comes to effective mass transit?
Yeah, Michigan, of course, has a legacy of essentially, not necessarily underinvestment in public transportation, but a clear prioritization over personal highway infrastructure investments over those for more mass transit expenditures. And in many ways, this makes sense. Of course, I don't need to tell your listeners about the role of the auto industry in Michigan's past and all the great benefits, frankly, it gave to households who had jobs in it and selling the cars all over the world. But one of the consequences of building out so many highways, whether we're talking about Detroit or Grand Rapids, is a underinvestment relative to those highway miles for public transportation, for those who may choose to not own a vehicle or simply are more interested in maybe leaving their car parked in the driveway and traveling to work through buses or even the potential for rail. In many ways, this left Detroit, which is one of the largest metropolitan areas in the country, as really one of those few at the top, if you will, there, without a major mass transportation system specifically that helped interlink its city and suburbs.
Well, in fact, I'll even date myself. I can remember my father taking me down to make sure that I got a ride. I was a little one, but I got a ride on the streetcar going up and down Woodward Avenue just as they were closing it down, which was in the 50s. And I guess that's kind of what we're talking about, wasn't it? Because the car makers were much happier seeing us all in cars rather than riding streetcars.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's a kind of well-trodden tale in the transportation circles about the role that was played by certain firms, and many say complicit in the national government too, to allow those streetcar tracks to be ripped out all across the country, and really actually not just promoting automobile travel, but actually disincentivizing travel by the rails, especially these kind of local intercity routes that we had built up, not just necessarily in Detroit, again, also places like Los Angeles and Washington, right here in Washington, D.C., where I am. So what we're seeing these days is really a reversal of that trend, a back-to-the-future kind of investment mentality of trying to create more options for Americans to get around. And in many ways, the fiscal crisis in 2008 kind of really helped bring this home. You know, for example, in the Detroit metropolitan area, we have seen that there are over 130,000 families without a vehicle. And that number obviously went up once the financial crisis hit. And the question is, how can we make sure that they have options to get around? Again, as well as those other families that maybe have a car or even two, but you know, want to have options when it comes to getting to work or going to the grocery store, et cetera.
That leads me to kind of wonder what your thoughts are in the price that you know we as citizens pay in terms of quality of life or job opportunities by not having effective mass transit in our big cities.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question, and it's one again. I think some of the especially the largest metropolitan areas where people face long commutes or just frankly long distances between places are really starting to think through is, you know, what is kind of having only one option do for me? You know, number one is that we see, you know, people are forced to spend more on gas, which in the long run has been going up in price. And even with the change to, you know, liquefied natural gas that we're seeing in the United States, even if we are an energy exporter, we're still going to need to import petroleum for specifically our automobiles. So that kind of cost really can't be exchanged for something else when it comes to, you know, when we're limited in our transportation options. Of course, cars also pollute at a higher rate than buses and trains, certainly when those buses and trains are full. And also, you know, cars are simply such an active experience, especially for the driver, whereas, you know, taking a seat on a bus or a train really offers the opportunities to be productive in other ways, whether it means reading a magazine or even catching up on work email.
Or sleep.
And so there's a real difference there that people are starting to get keen to.
Yes. And I see that, as I say, I just came back from visiting my son, daughter-in-law, and grandson in Chicago, and it is stunning how they just automatically assume that they can each get to work, get home, get around. If it's not on foot, then you catch the L. And it's just become such a part of their life. And it makes me, when I look at that, wonder, could we ever really see that here in Michigan? If we could see it in Grand Rapids, see it in Detroit. And I know we've begun with this, with our new Transportation Authority for Southeast Michigan, but that's just a group of people. And you wonder, will it ever happen?
You know, the one big thing that we found, we did a big study a couple of years ago on public transportation in America, comparing the 100 largest metropolitan areas, of which Detroit and Grand Rapids are each a part of. And what we found from Detroit was that actually buses tend to run fairly well in terms of neighborhood coverage. You know, they tend most people live in a neighborhood with service. And actually, the buses run pretty frequently, especially in the city of Detroit. It's about a 7.5 average wait time for a bus. The problem arises from Detroit is simply so spread out now. So there are so many jobs and people in the suburbs and then vice versa in the city. And frankly, the distances to travel and the need to go to these central depot locations has really created problems when it comes to commuting. The question is, will this now regional transportation authority give local leaders the opportunity to make planning more aligned with where people have chosen to live and where jobs have located over the past few decades? So more suburb-to-suburb routing, maybe more frequent routing along certain main corridors, as you brought up. You know, what are they going to do with the Woodward Avenue line to help make it a more attractive location for businesses and people, you know, to move to that area? The bones are there, but a lot of tough decisions are ahead of them.
If you're just joining us, we are talking with Adi Tumera, who's a senior research associate at the Brookings Institute, Washington-based think tank, looking at the future of mass transit in Michigan. Now, we've been talking about Detroit. What can we address as far as Grand Rapids, because they were a part of your study as well?
Yeah, so the service connectivity is actually quite good. One of the top, what we call transportation accessibility metrics in the country. And what that means is, if I live in neighborhood X, you know, how many jobs can I get to throughout the rest of my metropolitan area? And again, Grand Rapids actually does quite a good job there.
Detroit's issue, too, we have to talk about the cash problems, because there are many riders with stories of standing and waiting, and a bus doesn't come, and basically it's because it's broken down and it's sitting in a warehouse, in a maintenance garage, and they can't get them fixed. Do you envision a day when Detroit would be able to, with the help of this regional authority, be able to kind of get things more on track?
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much that can happen from having this kind of regional governance structure in place now. Number one is, depending on how they structure it, but if there's a willingness on the part of the residents, Michigan has some unique state laws with regards to the millages and things for what regional authorities in transportation can raise. But, you know, if the residents are willing to kind of pay for it, there's an opportunity now to make some of these investments.
Meaning say yes to tax increases.
That's essentially what we're talking about. What we're seeing across the country is that even though there are obviously different sides of the aisle, but when it comes to taxes, let's say, of course, the fiscal cliff negotiations going on right now in Washington, there seems to be a question mark, right, over if we're going to see taxes increase. What do I, you know, as a taxpayer, get for my money?
Yeah, yeah.
But what we've seen across the country actually is the opposite in terms of attitude when it comes to local transportation issues, and not just buses and trains, but also highways, too. From across the country, metropolitan areas are passing these local ballot measures to tax themselves a little bit more to be able to get more local transportation dollars, essentially shouting out, you know, for other communities to say, look, if you can tell me where my money's going to go, I have more willingness to invest in these kind of public utilities. There's a great opportunity here in Detroit, again, but it's a question of how can the public, private, and citizen work together to make it a reality.
Adi, I know in your studies you point to Portland as kind of the golden child of mass transit. What lessons can Grand Rapids and Detroit and our other large cities in Michigan learn from Portland?
Yeah, you know, Portland is in many ways in vogue in the United States. They've kind of set themselves up for decades now from a planning perspective to say we want to change our identity for how people commute. And so they've instituted a few things. Number one is, again, they also are willing to tax themselves to build certain public transportation infrastructure that, frankly, the citizens were interested in, everything from streetcars to light rails, even to bike infrastructure that really could give their citizens options. But on the other side of the planning equation, they've also been very purposeful about where real estate development is going to occur. And it's trying to concentrate development in specific nodes to make sure that distances are tighter and people can have more options in the kind of physical environment they can live in. This isn't about, quote-unquote, outlawing the suburbs, which, you know, sometimes critics kind of see for places like Portland. In fact, it's Portland has just as many suburbs as other places. But it's also providing neighborhoods that are denser, that are more, quote-unquote, walkable, also bikeable, if you will, and give people the options to live in those places, or even, frankly, for businesses to locate in those places. So in many ways, this is so much of what local leaders are trying to do with the Woodward Avenue line is create that kind of environment right there in Detroit. You know, Detroit has such great bones in the dense kind of central business district, you know, a great street grid, the opportunity to really have this kind of dense environment. It's now time for public transportation to kind of help bring that home to, again, give more options for the residents in the greater metropolitan area.
Almost, as you say, going kind of back to the future, going back to the way it was in the 40s when you did have a dense business area and people could get to it and get to it easily.
Yeah, we made a great big experiment when it came to the automobile. For decades, we decided from, you know, the federal government down to local levels that we were really going to invest in the automobile. Everyone was going to have an opportunity to own a car, and we really tried out that kind of exclusive model. But what we've kind of learned, which is true almost in any public policy you pick, that investing in just one thing tends to not work. Moderation in kind of a more central road tends to be more effective. And by ignoring especially public transportation options, but also, you know, this unexpected effect of creating environments that weren't walkable, that weren't bikeable, has left us with less options. And frankly, people are starting to be interested in some of those alternatives. Again, it's not about getting rid of, you know, more auto-centric suburbs, let's say. It's about having choice, you know, in your neighborhood. And frankly, what's more American than that?
Adi Tomer with the Brookings Institute. Thanks for your insights and thanks for talking with us today on Stateside.
All right. Thanks for having me.
And we want